Welcome all to the Delicious Recipe with your host, Adele, here on UPRN Internet Radio. You can check us out live on YouTube and check us out on other platforms too as well to check out the large host of different topics that go across on the network here on UPRN 107.7 FM New Orleans. Make sure I get all that stuff in there correctly. And look about signing up and becoming a member on, I believe it's UPRN Talk Radio, and for extra bonus content that'll be coming up here shortly and that. And you can go through and look through in archives and stuff like that. And also with YouTube, too, you can also check out live and speaker stuff that's on there of past shows. And I think when I started back was October. So there's shows there of mine there that deal with topics that deal with stuff even today. So today, what I named this one was a mixed salad. So we're getting away from hot foods, and we're going to go a little bit of green. And like with green salads, a mixed salad, there's so many possibilities that are out of there. Just like soup and stew, like you can make so many different things. And that's the whole thing, is we're going to throw a whole bunch of stuff into the bowl, and we'll see what it comes out at the end. So just in the beginning part here, I will say that what's going on here in Ontario, Canada. So we've just been our premier, I think it's Doug Ford or whatever, a Ford anyways, has put in new restrictions now. I think they had said something like there was 400 cases, new cases of COVID-19 that resurfaced over the past little while. And this, I guess, all goes into parts with schools going back in, like some schools are going that's strictly at home, and some are going actually to schools in the classrooms, and whatever restrictive stuff is going on with that. And over this time, I guess as summer is sort of winding down, coming into fall, and I guess there's been some outdoor gatherings and that, they've reduced outdoor gatherings here in Ontario, and this goes across the board, which is really sort of funny in the way that I sort of look at it there, because Northern Ontario is way separate than Southern Ontario as in population wise. I think we're maybe like less than 3% of the total population of Ontario. It's mostly all down in Southern Ontario, and there's a lot more room and a lot more people, less people up here. And so what have they done? They said in-house gatherings to limit to 10. And outdoor gatherings limit to 25, reduced down. And I think this is going over the next 28 days. And there's been some sort of questions arising from this with these protests that have been happening in the States and in Canada with Black Lives Matter and Antifa and protests and squatters in Southern Ontario, in Toronto area, there were people have been setting up encampments in parks and stuff like that, putting in tenting areas where they're in violation of city bylaws. Nothing's being done by the city about this or by the police department issuing fines, but anybody that's sort of it's just bucking the system in a way. They're sort of being threatened that they will be fined. And I think what the new fining system up here now is individual in a group that's more than, I guess, the 20 or the 25 outside. So if you have that, I think this fine started at $750. And organizer of the protest or the gathering and stuff like that, they can be fined $10,000 up to $100,000. And I guess a lot of this comes into question there is about with the Charter of Rights up here in Canada, is that one of the parts of the Charter of Rights is that everybody has the right to protest and to gather. And that cannot be swayed in any which way, shape or form. And I guess with the act is now the Medical Act or the Emergencies Act. I think in the first paragraph it refers to is that the Charter of Rights overshadows everything compared to whatever the medical needs are on there. So there's a big, huge power play, I guess you would say, in a way, between government forcing their opinion and rule over individuals' rights. And that's just a thing that's sort of going on. And there's the question that's been there too, is that if you're having a gathering of yourself with people, are they going to still enforce it for the rest of these protest marches that are happening across the country where there's actually hundreds to thousands of people? Are they going to be finding these people? Because it seems to be is that that doesn't seem to be the situation. But as this rolls on and as this moves on and closer to the election that happens in the U.S., that it's going to be sort of interesting to see the different power plays that political parties seem to want to play, and rule of government law dictating against, I guess, the rights of the people and whatever, like up here, like your Charter of Rights and downstates, the Constitution. So, but getting back into another part of here with the mixed salad, it gets sort of tiring there. Keep on watching, I guess you'd say, all these different political stuff. So I spent a few days just watching sort of documentaries and even dealing with stuff that deals with the green energy, Green Deal, and with this whole carbon footprint stuff. And these are all political talking points that seem to be coming up. And I did a show there back at, I think was it back in, I can't remember when it was. Let me just look. Well, it was back earlier in the year. Anyways, it was about Agenda 2030 there. And it was all about the goals that the UN and all the rest of the countries there want to sort of put into place. And I sort of had this whole thing about what it was there. I said like there was like 17, I believe. Was there 17 different steps of what they want to do. Like a lot of stuff is ensure access to affordable, reliable, sustainable, modern energy for all. And the whole thing about reducing carbon footprint and changing the way that we sort of use energy. And you look at how it is there today is that we use pretty much energy for everything. Everything's sort of plugged in, where everything's sort of wireless. Like I can say in the house there, like our cell phone's wireless, whether or not it's a direct line or I don't even have a computer even now that's even hooked up directly to a modem anymore. Everything's Wi-Fi. So a lot of signals bouncing around all over the place and being transmitted through the house. And you figure from remotes to your phone, to your iPad, to your laptop. And it reminds me of a picture I'd seen back in the early 1900s. I believe I posted this early in the year, or maybe at the end of last year. And it was a picture of New York City. And it was about all the hydro lines and telephone lines that sort of crisscrossed the city. And there were so many lines that were going through to be have people connected so they would be able to use the technology at that time. And it was so cluttered and crisscrossed like a spider's web that probably a bird couldn't even fly through there. So you look at it now is that now in today's technology, everybody's got a cell phone, something wireless connected to, like your cell phone's connected to repeater towers and whatever it's 3G, 4G, and the upcoming whatever 5G that's going to be around there. And equipment in office buildings where it's wireless technology going through there is that you don't see the wires anymore, but there's a lot of signals being blasted through the air that you don't see. And a lot of people don't even think about that. And there's been over the years where a lot of people have sort of been getting this sort of this Wi-Fi sickness or whatever, or this sort of radiation, I guess you would say that radiation sickness in a way, just from signals that are coming through there through the bands. But getting back to this other part, so I watched this interesting documentary, and you can check it out on YouTube, and it was all about green energy. And let me see what it was. It was from a director, Jeff Gibbs, and it was called Planet of Humans, which was actually, and check it out if you want to. It's still playing on there. And it was just showing the whole thing about what this green energy is. And I think a lot of people have this sort of this misnomer of how we can go away from coal and fossil fuels and live our life as it is currently right now. And I asked this question and a long time ago when I was taking environmental engineering back in the early 90s, and about what the cost of running off-grid where you were away from the power grid is to maintain your actual your lifestyle and to use everything you're having it feasibly in a way is not even possible. It actually talks about this too in this documentary. Was really interesting because actually a lot of points, and I'm not urging you, but if you want to check it out, it was really sort of interesting because this sort of ties into a lot of topics of what these political parties are sort of suggesting about going through there. And the big part about it is that green renewable energy, like solar panels, wind farms, hydroelectric, they impact the environment quite a bit. Like to put up a solar generating farm that was there with us, a bunch of mirrors that are pointing up to a tower, or putting up a whole bunch of solar panels, the amount of energy that they produce for the technology that we have right now is very minimalistic. And they showed a lot of examples, and they went to a lot of places that were actually having these outdoor festivals that were
good evening,
promoting
everyone,
that, hey,
and
this
welcome
is all
to
run
another
on
episode
green
of
energy
Science.
Solar, and they'd have this little solar farm hooked up to the side. And this investigator, the director of that, went across and went around there and says, well, is this charging the whole entire stage system, all the electronics, the lights, the amplifiers, everything? And the guy just said, basically, no, we're plugged into the grid. And there was another show that I'd watched too that's sort of in with this too. And it was actually sort of interesting. You can check it out. I think it was called Casa de Sol or Route de Sol. And it's all about this guy from Australia. And he made a solar vehicle that would travel all the way from the Arctic Circle. And he was going all the way down to the bottom of South America, all run by solar panels. And I just followed. It was actually pretty interesting. But the thing is, though, is that at times there is that you have to plug into the grid because solar is not enough to charge the vehicle to travel. And you got to figure how long they've been. It's been over a year, I guess. And I think they're just into Mexico right now. And, well, it's an interesting story. You can check that one out, too, as well. And they had a little mishap there. I think their panels blew off their vehicle. But it's just interesting to see what actually this technology can do. And an interesting part is about these wind farms with these huge turbines. And they went around there is that the actual running length that these turbines can run before the parts wear out is usually around 20 years. So you got to look at the cost and to put these things in. So you got to clear out a huge amount of vegetation and field area. Then you got to bring in a whole bunch of rebar concrete. So you have to have that from a processing plant that is not running off the solar, and you're digging up soil and you're digging up mining. You're doing all this stuff to create all this stuff to create just even the base for one of these huge wind turbines. And then the actual turbine, all the mechanisms and the metal and wood and electronics and everything like that, that's all got to be mined materials. That's not all just recycled materials. It's some of it can be, but a lot of it isn't. And then it's processed, and then it has to be built, fabricated, transported, and then set up. So just to put like a one turbine in, there's actually a lot of extra stuff that's being done that I guess a lot of people don't think of. And it even goes with the part there with these solar panels, which was actually an interesting thing because I had thought about this too before, is that what do they make these solar cells out of? The glass, the stuff? Well, to make the crystallized cells, they just can't use sand. See, a lot of people think that glass is just made from regular sand, like beach sand or sand from the desert, but that's not actually the case. A lot of it is made from quartz, which is mined, and mixed with coal. So it is burned together at a very high rate, and then it creates this compound structure that is then made into the glass that is used into making these solar panels. So to make something that is not using energy, you have to use a lot of energy to create that. And one of the biggest parts that I had seen about there is that all the talks, they keep on talking about how great this solar energy, this wind turbines, and how great, like, we're eco-friendly and that, but it cannot run on its own. So a lot of these processes, they'll have them there running, and they have to have a secondary backup system running. So you'd have to have a, depending on where area you're in, either it could be a natural gas electric plant running 24/7, or a coal-fired plant running 24/7. There's a new one they got there is biomass and biofuel, and that is taking plant material such as trees, cutting them down, and then making a fuel or using it to burn in generators. So now you're pillaging from, instead of under the ground in the mining operation, now you're pillaging on top of the ground. You're clear cutting out forests and planting huge fields of crops that are not indigenous to the area to create a fuel source, to create a backup source to run with your solar source or your wind source, right? Because wind doesn't blow all the time. The sun doesn't shine 24 hours a day. And you have to have something that meets the demand, because if you look at what it is, if you shut off all of fossil fueled power generation, the demand during the daytime to run everything, you would not have the power to run that. So, and people would be very upset about this too as well, right? If you were there and then you'd have these rolling blackouts where there's no power for hours and hours on end, how would companies run? How would the manufacturing go on? Like, there's a whole other aspect to this that I don't think people are very aware of. I'm not against green energy at all. Like, I'm totally supportive. I think it's a great secondary system or a complement system that can be put into place to lessen your draw on the power that is being used. It's the same thing with these electric cars and that these charging systems. Like, they're not being charged by just plain solar energy. They're being charged by off the grid. You plug it into your house that is getting hydroelectric or coal or nuclear power, because you cannot supply the demand. And then you have to look at the battery storage system that you'd have to have in place, and those have a shelf life too as well. So you'd have the amount of batteries and what the batteries are made of. They're made up of a lot of sometimes toxic and radioactive elements in there to hold and maintain a charge. So there's a lot of different aspects that are involved in this green energy and this whole talk about reducing the carbon footprint and reducing, getting rid of coal power and getting rid of nuclear and water power. Like, you even have to look at, even with hydroelectric power, there's been a huge amount of dams that were built through in China and even in the States there too as well. You got that big one there in the, what's that, Hoover Dam. But how it impacts the environment down the road, down from that, like the water coming through, increases in temperature, affects the way that the river ecology is. You block off migration routes of fish species and stuff like that. And you have that even going on in China too, whereas you have to build up a big, huge headstock. So you end up flooding out valleys, you end up changing the whole layout of the land just to provide power. So there's a lot of issues that are there. It's just not easy to just to think that changing and getting rid of carbon, like, you figure if they had it there and we got 10 years and they want to go and reduce all the carbon down, they want to go down to even zero. So you got to look at what would be the infrastructure that would have to be put in place to have charging stations all along for your vehicle, for that there was no more gas powered vehicles, period. Everything went on to electricity, and you have to figure, where is this electricity coming from? And like I said, the sun, wind, and water is not a viable, it's not secure that could amount to handle the need, because not everywhere where, like, a huge hydroelectric dam, like the one in at Hoover, the ones that are in China, they're big enough to charge up a city and stuff like that, but it's not viable all across because we don't have the, like, there's not a big, huge water system everywhere where you'd be able to get this power going. So that was just sort of an interesting sort of thought. Interesting documentary anyways. There's more to it that I'm just sort of lightly touching on it there. But that, I guess, was it Christmas natural gas oil drilling? Yeah, like even natural gas, right? They're saying how much of that's a clean energy stuff there, but it's still, you're drilling into the earth just like you're drilling in for oil, and you're doing all that to harvest natural gas out and then run it into these power plants. So interesting sort of thing to sort of think about over the time. To check that one out, that was called again Planet of the Humans, and it was on YouTube, and sort of interesting. So another part there is you get into election time that's coming even closer, and we'll just throw some more ingredients into this salad bowl here, and you can see a lot of debate and I guess sort of picking at different issues seems to be coming up there. But I just want to go through some certain words, I guess, to make us sort of familiarized with terms that I've been seeing for a long time, but there's a lot in the talk and stuff like that. And like I've said before, is go out and research this stuff yourself. I'll give you sort of things to look at there too. I got some other ones for you to check out. I'll give those to you later. But terms that were sort of put in that are used a lot in the mainstream media and also in independent media. And things like democracy. So I got these definitions there off of the internet. Some of it's off of Wikipedia, some of it's off of whatever Google definitions and that, just what's ever out there, and just to get what they are. So you'll hear these many times, but just to sort of give ourselves sort of a refresher of what these are. So first one is democracy. You hear this all the time, right? You know, it says like Canada's a democracy, US is a democracy. I think a lot of countries are democracies. And then what's the other part there? You get into communism and other things there. But so democracy, electing a government by the whole of the population. So that means everybody has a vote, and whoever ends up winning at the end of the vote is the person that is in power. So that's pretty straightforward. And that's what the term is. So you hear this other term, authoritarian, favoring or enforcing strict obedience to authority, especially that of a government, at the expense of personal freedom. So you'll hear that, authoritarian, and you'll hear that term come up a lot. Autocratic, ruler who has absolute power. And then you'll hear another term there, semi-autocratic, right? So whatever that is, semi, so partial, total, absolute power. So here's another one that, because you have these groups out there like BLM and also Antifa, and they use this word fascist a lot, but this is what fascism means. Okay. A form of far-right authoritarian ultra-nationalism characterized by dictatorial power, forcible suppression of opposition, and strong regimentation of society and of the economy. So far-right dictatorial power, right? So that's it. So you'll get this other term that'll be there, and it's used this lots, and you'll see this on news clips, right? Because Antifa will call out people fascists, Nazis, communists. So communism, what is that? A political theory derived from Karl Marx, advocating class war and leading to a society in which all property is publicly owned and each person works and is paid accordingly to ability and needs. Okay, so there you go. That's what the communist term is. And the term Nazi has been turned out there. A person who seeks to impose their views on others in a very autocratic or inflexible way. So there you got that autocratic word again. There, ruler has absolute power. Okay. Or also extreme racist or authoritarian view. Okay. So we've authoritarian. We've already said favoring or enforcing strict obedience to authority, especially that of the government, in an expense of personal freedom. So another thing you've heard there many times before, Bernie Sanders is a socialist. So socialism, a political and economic theory of social organization, which advocates that the means of production, distribution, and exchange should be owned or regulated by the community as a whole. Okay, so that's whatever you want to get out of that. Capitalism, another term that's been out of there, that's been used many, many, many times. And they'll say that, okay, yeah, America is a capitalist society, and Trump is a capitalist, and these people are capitalists, all the wealthy, right? So economic and political system in which a country's trade and industry are controlled by private owners for profit rather than by the state. Okay, so I mean, if you want to be put in other terms there, you create your own business. That's entrepreneurship, right? And then capitalistic, you create more wealth and trade for yourself, and you end up paying it back anyways in taxes and stuff like that. Here comes another one here, because the BLM triplets, their Alicia Garza, Patrice Cullors, and Opal Tometi, the leaders and founders of the Black Lives Matter, they've classified themselves and termed themselves as Marxists. Okay, so what is a Marxist? Marxism, I guess. Political or economic theories of Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, later developed by their followers to form the basis for the theory and practice of communism. So Marxism is the theories that communism is, we go back to that, a political theory derived from Karl Marx, advocating class war and leading to a society in which all property is publicly owned and each person works and is paid accordingly to the ability and needs. So you get all this whole part out of this, and you start to think about, okay, so if you have a movement, and I'll get into what this movement is too, because there's sort of a lot of things that sort of happened with this. And the co-founders of the Black Lives Matter movement, and this has been the big thing that it sort of blew up this year with initiating on this George Floyd incident that happened there. And they originally, as I looked up what BLM originally stood for when it was created there, and I believe it was in 2013, this is what their statement was. BLM, Black Lives Matter, is a decentralized political and social movement advocating for nonviolent civil disobedience in protests of police brutality and all radically motivated violence against Black people. So that's 2013, nonviolent civil disobedience in protests. Okay, so what did they start doing there? Okay, so that ended up happening. They had the George Floyd issue. And yet I also remember that this is 2020. There is a huge push for civil unrest between the Democrats and Republicans in the states. And there's a whole anti-Trump hate, and there's a whole pro-Trump discussion that can be out there about what's going on and how the country is being run. And if you've seen any of the local news there with, I think it was Hillary Clinton just even stating there a little while ago, is that even if Trump wins, Joe Biden, not to succeed, don't step down, don't give up, we're going to fight this. And that's sort of a really weird way to have an election, and they're going to fight and find every sort of little nuance that they can to overthrow whatever the vote is. And the way that this whole matter of right wing, left wing has sort of transpired across the country, because like I said, whatever happens in the states affects everything globally, and with us being here in Canada, it affects us directly, indirectly as well. So you got to think about the whole political structure that's going on down there, and all the little power plays, and all the different little people that are not the little people, but the people that are in government, a lot of them are all self-serving to themselves and to their party and to their pocketbook. Like I've said before, is that small government, small community government deals mostly with the community. And then when it gets bigger provincially or state there, that the people that are put in power actually start worrying a little bit more about their financial stake into the gain and how they can benefit themselves. And then when they get even bigger, it's more or less like you can see what's happened here in Canada with our prime minister and with the SNC Lavalin debacle there, and with the Wee charity about funneling in money and passing it back and forth in between charity and back in towards his own family. There's been a lot of talk about that too as well. So let's find out where it's gone to now. So as of, I believe it is, as of 2020, with Black Lives Matter joining up with Antifa, and I've talked about this before, and I wish I could have found my other book, like, where I had this stuff there, these notes, and I've talked about this before with the OSF, the Open Society Foundation, and that's by George Soros, and I've talked about George Soros quite a bit, and his game plan is, and I talked about his whole life, and I'll give you a brief stuff. He was born, I think his name was George Schwartz, and then it was changed to Soros to mean Flight of the Eagle or something like that. The communist Nazis had come in, and his father didn't want them taken, so he got a person in the government to pretend that he was his nephew or son, and that's where they changed the name from Schwartz to Soros. And he went out on missions with this guy to appropriate Jewish properties and to take it in there. And he's been quoted in statements as that learning that at a young age is that he learned and said that it's better to take and it's better for me to have than anybody else. So that's his sort of his game plan, right? So funding, he's been noted for many times there with the OSF, has been funding radical social groups, social dissidence groups to put people into power. And it's been shown, you can go and fact check this stuff up yourself there. He's funded many political people in the States there. And he's said before that he has no love for the U.S. at all, but he's more financially motivated than anything. Put people in key positions, whether it be judicial or government, so that they will pass or persuade laws to go in the favor of the OSF for his business, right? Like he's been called a philanthropist, but I don't know when Obama goes and gives him a $9.3 million before he leaves office there. That's he's not using his own money, he's using other people's money. But you can fact check that one out as well too. But so you have OSF funding, and it's been widely known about this, funding social dissident groups to cause change in governments to sway his way. And it's Antifa and BLM, and these groups have accepted money, and you can check this all out. I'm not telling you any different than that, and I'm not lying to you, but like I say, don't believe me, check the facts yourself. But you see what's happening now is you have these social protests that are going on, and whereas you had the original part with Black Lives Matter, you know, like I said, nonviolent civil disobedience in protests of police brutality. So you had that. Now the new part is, this is the new slogan, is that if change doesn't happen, then we'll burn down the system. So they've gone from being nonviolent to now burning down the system. And if you've not been living under a rock, you've been seeing what's been happening in all these cities across the U.S. and even here in Canada. There's been protests in cities in out in BC and in southern Ontario, and I believe in Montreal too as well, of these groups causing sit-ins, taking over parks. And like I was saying there before, is that in Southern Ontario, a lot of these groups have basically squatted in private parks, not private parks, public parks, and have taken over. And they're in in accordance, they're in violation of city ordinance and that, but nothing's being done. Now you look at what happened in that Chaz Chop area, and it just seems to happen that all this violence and civil unrest has been happening in Democratic cities, right? Because you have a Republican that is the president right now in for re-election, and Democratic mayors and states allowing these protests to prevail and allow them to do what they're doing, burning down cities, going against the police. So you got to figure is that you have here at the beginning, 2013, nonviolent protests. Now it is burn it all down. So it's a very, very far change from what the original sort of matter is, right? So the three people, I should mention who they are if I didn't. Alicia Garza, a civil rights activist, okay? Yeah, Patrice Coolers, artist and activist. She wants to abolish prisons, and she's for all LGBTQ rights, and which is all fine there too as well. But the abolish prison systems and defunding police, I can't see how that's going to be any good. Opal Tometi, activist, writer, strategist, and community organizer. So you have these three ladies that created this BLM. And I think there's another guy, and I think I have that written down on another page here. Sorry, I'm a little bit all over the place in there with stuff. And if I can remember what his name was here, Dr. Frank Leon Roberts, founder of the BLM Sybilis pre-new system. So that was it. So yeah, they said BLM started, I guess, on Twitter back in March 7th of 2013. And it created this sounding message board for people to be around there. They had a rally in 2014, the I Can't Breathe, Hands Up, Don't Shoot. This all gets put on a social platform by the whole thing about blacks killed by non-blacks, the police. So what do they have here written there? Sorry about that. Yeah, so this is something I've written there before. And so this is a thing you sort of have to look at too as well. And so police shootings, not good. But you also have to look at too is about why were police called in the first place? Like, what was the thing? Like, if everybody's going to be running around and breaking the law and doing things and ripping off people or stealing and that, and you don't want police there, what's the sort of the option? I don't understand why this whole part about defunding police ever came into that, and getting rid of prisons got into this whole conversation, because it basically you just go back to the wild, wild west. So the issue is police not being charged. That's the whole thing that came back from with a lot of these, I think with it back from that Trayvon Martin and going up to different issues that have happened over there, up to the George Floyd. And I think some police have been charged, but not, or convicted or let go after a black person is killed, allegedly in the act of criminal behavior. Seems to be part of the BLM's don't want to address the issue to why the police were called. There have been mistakes over aggressive confrontations. And that's true. There is always mistakes that happen. But I guess they've sort of put it to the way that one mistake is the rest of everybody is all guilty, which is sort of a bad way to sort of look at things, right? Because you can't throw out the whole bunch of apples because of one bad apple, but or even one bad incident. And you got to look at what has sort of happened over the course of this year and how things have sort of ramped up. You've got these rallies that have been basically burning down and destroying private businesses, destroying inner city stuff, and destroying, trying to burn down police stations. And then as soon as later on that these Democratic politicians, mayors and governors, they allowed this stuff to happen, allowed like this Chaz Chop, and you saw what happened with that Chaz Chop. They went in there, took over, burnt down a whole bunch of stuff, created their own barriers, created their own walls, created their own police force, which is sort of funny when they want to defund the police, but they want to create their own police force. There was murders that happened in there, shootings, there was beatings and stuff like that. it was became basically lawless, and then they were asking for help afterwards. But the mayors and the state officials didn't do anything until they moved from the center of cities and started moving out to the suburbs. And you look at, you have these politicians, they have security forces, they have fences around their properties. They don't want it in their backyard. It's all fine when it's down there, when it's not affecting them. But when it starts affecting them, then they want to call into action. So you look at how things are going. So we got less than, or is it less than more than, well, you got to November 3rd, I guess, is the big, huge vote that's sort of happening there. And you have all this sort of sneaky politics, I guess, in a way. You have trying to change the voting way with mail-in voting. And there's lots of issues that can come with that, and whether or not that's the way to go. But even in your anybody would think there is that. How could you provide assurances that the person that voted voted that way, right? Like, kind of think about it as a different sort of way, is that it's been said they have those mail-in pre-early voting where you have to actually supply some sort of formal identification. You have a number, like up here we have a SIN number, you have a driver's license number, you have some sort of government ID that has a registered number that they know that is you, right? And just generic mail-in votings where somebody just signs down a name doesn't give you assurances to who that is actually, because anybody can go and write down your name. And that's I guess where the problem comes into. How can you successfully ensure that the vote that is being put in is from the actual person that voted, or is even lives at that address, or is even alive, or is even a person? So I guess those are sort of issues that come up, and that's sort of interesting things I think that anybody should look at. Because if you go and look at it this way, he says, pretend that it wasn't Donald Trump that's being reelected. Say it was Barack Obama that was being reelected, and it was the other party doing the other way. Do you think that this would be an issue that they would, that the DNC would say, hey, mail-in voting is still great, we're going to allow this? I don't think so. See how it's when something doesn't work in your favor, you want to change the way the system works so that it can make it an advantage to you. So anything that's not an advantage, or it could be fair in a way, or be reasonable to work, they're going to go and complain about it. And you've seen this many, many times lately, even in the mainstream media news about it. Like I mentioned before there with Hillary Clinton, they're saying is that, hey, if the vote comes out the other way and Donald Trump is reelected there, do not concede. We're going to fight this all the way through. And there's been lots of talk about what happens after this vote, no matter what the scenario is, whether it's a re-election or it's a change in power, and how the country is going to react. Because like I said, I look at this carefully from up here, and I'm actually looking at it from a view. I don't vote down there, so I'm looking at it as what is the effect going to be afterwards. Because you got to figure there's a lot of effect that happens. We have this COVID-19, like I said at the beginning. We have our premier in town in province there changing, saying, hey, we got a huge influx of COVID cases. It's all going up there. A lot of information, even with COVID-19, has still been yet to be determined as plausible or actual factual. Like it's been said there many times, is that you can catch COVID, and like the percentage that you're actually the death mortality rate is less than 1%, or is around 1%. So catching it is one thing, dying from it is a totally different sort of issue. So there's a lot of different ways that things could be spun, right? So if you would say the other way is that catching COVID-19, you have a 99.8% chance of living. that's a really good odd if you look at it that way. But see the way that I've talked about this before, about how media spins percentages and they market it differently to prove a point. Like I've said before, and I get really frustrated when I hear people use percentages, especially when they use percentages over 100, because percent means of 100. And I always give this sort of issue, like they'll say like this, well, it's a 150% chance. I go, okay, 150%. Now, how does that work? If I have a pie and I eat 100% of a pie, you can eat the other 50%. Right? It doesn't exist. There is nothing there, right? So there's, it's just a number to sort of sway actions. You could say that, I don't even know what you could say after that. That 150% really doesn't exist. And it means of 100. So 0 to 100, that's it. So when you see news articles and stuff like that, and they say the rise is 6,000%, you go, 6,000%, that doesn't make me mean it went up 600 times, maybe, but not 6,000%, because that's not actually a real number. So I'm going to get back off my riff there about that percent again, because I hear that very often. But so what do you, I was going to go back and, oh yeah, so I was going to mention here quickly before we're off air here again. So what else did I sort of watch over the last little while, and I got a couple little sites there. I'd like you to, if you're willing to check it out, and you can check it out. One was called The Social Dilemma. That was on Netflix, and all dealt with the whole part about social platforms like Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, and that, how they market to people and how they sort of direct your thought pattern and thinking, and how they direct advertising towards you, or news articles towards you, and what stuff you sort of see. So it was a really sort of interesting, and it was a little bit cheesy at times there, but it had sort of an interesting message that you should check out. Good thing to do. And another one there I sort of checked out, and I guess we're not going to have really a lot of time to really go through this. There was on Blaze TV, if you want to check out Glenn Beck, there had done a couple different little specials. And one of them was Civil War, The Way America Could End in 2020. And that was a really sort of interesting take on things. And it dealt with overthrowing the government. And this has sort of been a talk about what is sort of like, because the U.S. has sort of done this before with the CIA and that in other countries, I believe it's in Ukraine, over in Saudi Arabia, the Middle East, how they get to change to get stuff done in the way, even down in the, I think it was Venezuela, down in the South America, to put powers and put people into place to overthrow, to benefit themselves. So they had I'll just go quickly through sort of the two main points out of this is that you'll see in this sort of happening right now, even in the States, and this is where this is sort of coming through. And this is what the DNC has sort of been pushing through since, even through Barack Obama's time there, but even what, as soon as 2016 sort of happened. And it was, what I got here, steps to overthrow a government. And this has been done in other countries. You control the media. And you have people like from Hollywood or cultural icons coming out and going through social media or commercials and that, posing their political views and how people should vote. And even have companies that are doing sort of stuff, supporting, giving donations to BLM groups and that, or Antifa groups through backdoor channels. But you have these, you've seen this lots, you have singers, artists, musicians, I guess, actors, athletes, going on different social platforms or posting on their Facebook, Twitter, and stuff like that, their social views and their political views and the way to vote, and they standing about whether they are pro-Trump or anti-Trump or whatever. Just political views and getting people that a lot of youth, you would say, don't even, I guess they're not really watching a lot of mainstream media or not. They're getting a lot of their information through these social platforms. And that can be a very dicey sort of topic, I guess, if you look at it, there is like, because nothing is being fact checked. It's all, and I've talked to other people that are out there that the way that they get their, they hear it from this source. It's almost like that game of telephone, and they just believe what their friends are believing or their social group is believing. Education, unions, teachers union, you got to look at what is being taught in the schools now. And there's a whole a series on that too about, I didn't write that one down. I'm sorry about that. I thought I did. Did I write it? No, I didn't. About how certain political agendas, social structures have been sort of taught through the schools through kindergarten going up through grade 12 and then in post-secondary schools where we've gotten away from the reading, writing, and arithmetic model, and we've gone into the more of this social contract or social construct of gender, sexuality, white, black, colored, BLM. There's been stuff like that even in the schools. We've gotten away from the religious aspect even here in Canada. I think they removed the Lord's Prayer a long time ago. Like, they've changed it. We're a multicultural society, so to be, and everybody has a right to everything, but actually you don't. But that's just a topic for another show. So in the States there, you have the government, you have corrupt politicians, you have a deep state, you have old guard that's in there that want certain things to be the way that they are. You got to figure that the big change happened there was with that 2016 where actually Trump actually won after he was goaded by Obama to run, and he ends up, he does win when they figured Hillary Clinton was going to win and the progress was going to keep on going through as it is. But that's where you have this big huge change. Military money funding, you got from the Fed, BLM, George Soros, different functions funding in money. Social media, like I said, Google, Twitter, YouTube, controlling the narrative about what's going on there. Like, you've seen a shadow banning happen over the years. Anybody that talks about real issues or talks about anything that's different from what the narrative is being out there, they're being banned off of social platforms. And this is not a new thing. This has been talked about many times. They call us truthers or tinfoil hat wearers or conspiracy theorists, all these things. So they put it over there that they're not to be trusted, and they get deplatformed or taken off the air. And there's been a lot of fight for that. So police, cutting the police, cutting funding for the police, that's been a big, huge topic that's there. That's been what the BLM Antifa stuff has been about there, cutting down all the stuff. Causing disturbances from the low level all the way to the high. So you have, like we see right now, cities burning by BLM and Antifa members. And then compliance was another issue there. You have government putting restrictions on there and population following what the government is telling them to do. So like mask wearing, group, how many people can be in a group, where you can go, restrictions to travel, restrictions to a lot of things. And these have been just been automatically put into place. And it's just sort of interesting to see how this is playing out. But in any effect, we'll go through more of this stuff. Maybe we'll make another mixed salad at another time. But this has been the Delicious Recipe. And here on 107.7 FM New Orleans Talk Radio. And just hope everybody stays safe out there. And I just want you all to check out and review stuff and go and search for other information. Like, I can just give you parts to the salad to throw into the bowl, but there's other things out there. And just find out other information. Just don't listen to what you're reading off your phone and reading what you're hearing off your CNN, MSNBC, and mainstream media news is there. You should spend the time, if you're actually serious about worrying about what's going on for your life, is go out and actually research this stuff and all I can do is add ingredients to the salad. But anyways, there, I hope you all have a great night, and stay tuned after this. You have Laura Lee Poffin on the Angel Rock, and right here on UPRN 7.7 FM. Good night, all. Da 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 da.